Joel Embiid needs to play basketball to get into basketball shape. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. If you want evidence, you remember seeing Nikola Jokic for the first time this year? Like that first week of the Nuggets season? And everyone was like, oh my God, what in the world has Jokic been eating?
The Pillsbury Doughboy?
Jokic admits that he was, quote, a little bit overweight to begin the season before starting a new diet and workout plan. He says that he's lost between 20 and 25 pounds this season. I believe it, actually. You look at Jokic and you look at the comparison between him at the start of the season and now. Yeah, diet and nutrition obviously help out a lot, but so does playing basketball. That's why people were like, oh, Embiid needs to be way more locked in on his fitness and stuff like that. I agree if there's a nutritional element to it that he can improve on 100%, but hard to get into NBA basketball shape without playing NBA basketball. Before we get to Jim, you're coming up right now. Andrew K tweets, and you want to know why there's so many fans of opposing teams in our area? It's because of the process. This whole situation is god-awful for the city and its fans. Wow. Akilo Dope tweets in, I think you're forgetting the first year the Sixers lost to Boston. They weren't even supposed to be that good. They overachieved. I think it was difficult. I hear your point, Kilo, but I think it was difficult for us to project how good they were going to be because we hadn't seen them play with Embiid and Simmons together for any length of time, you know? And like once we saw them playing together, like it made a lot more sense. I don't know if they're a team that like took people by surprise. Now, maybe relative to preseason expectations, 100%. But by the time they were playing, I think they had a lot going on. Jim in Havertown's next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Joe. How you been?
Okay, how are you?
All right. I just want to touch on a couple of quick things. I'd rather not debate these two things real that much. I'd rather get to my third point, but you can, of course, expound on them. Joel Embiid will never be the best player in the Eastern Conference until the Greek Freak goes somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I can't stand people always talking about Joel Embiid being the best. He's second best. He will never match the stats of the Greek Freak. Mm-hmm. And the other one is, Hinkie. I'm some anti-freaking process. Where's Hinkie at now? Where's all the Hinkie supporters when we all told him, all the anti-guys, said this guy will never work at the NBA again. Never be a general manager again.
They've all said, yeah, we'll see. Yeah. You're right about that.
Yeah. And that was before his being called. The third thing, brother, is this is what I want to talk to you about, is I don't think there's a learned basketball player out there or a basketball person, I should say, you know, fans, that doesn't know that this kid doesn't even have to develop an outside game that much. He does need to shoot over 70% from the foul line to go into the Hall of Fame with all the other stats he has. And the example I'll use is the Worm. But the Worm did win multiple championships with two different teams, too. You can't just say he won because of Jordan.
Sure.
Because he also won with Detroit. So, but who knows who this kid, Ben, might play with in the future, right, brother? There might be a guy who's a senior in high school this year that we don't even know about that might wind up playing with Ben and might be another phenom or something, you know what I mean? So he might get them championships. So I say he definitely has a shot at the Hall of Fame. That's how good he is at everything else.
Well, I agree, Jim, especially, and thanks for the phone call, man. I appreciate it. I think that Jim is on to something with Ben's skill set relative to the Hall of Fame. However, he is absolutely right. The championships weigh heavily there. He would be helped out tremendously, skill set aside, if the ability to win titles were attached to his resume as well. Best player in the Eastern Conference. All right, so the best player in the Eastern Conference right now is definitely Giannis, right? The best player in the Eastern Conference probably for the next couple of years is Kevin Durant. I think that there is a stretch here. If there's a 3 or 4 year stretch, you know, how long is Joel Embiid going to play at the level that Joel Embiid is currently playing or better? You know, it's just big guys and injuries. You never know. You just never know how it's going to go. So I don't know that that's that big of a stretch. But if Embiid isn't the best player in the Eastern Conference, does that mean that he can't help you? Does that mean that he's a player who cannot be a contributing piece on a title team? I don't think that that's the case. I think that Embiid has a lot to offer. So I don't know if it necessarily becomes the most important thing that he's the best player in the Eastern Conference. You know, and if Ben Simmons takes his step up, and you know, we talked about developing the floater, and we talked about developing from the free throw line. We talked about a lot of different things with Ben that, you know, outside of the 3-point shot, you know, he'd be helped out tremendously in the event that they're able to win a title. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter at Joe Torti, at 97.5 The Fanatic, also at Tyler Zuli. I can't believe that we've still got... The Sixers could have this big run in front of them where they get red hot coming out of the All-Star break. They had nice momentum going into the All-Star break. And yet the conversation is still turned to, you know, who is the next coach and what's going to happen when this team underachieves. Isn't it possible that, like, you know, we've seen the Sixers respond to, I don't want to say the fans turning on them, but like a little bit of a lack of goodwill, or maybe the grace period wearing off with Embiid and Simmons. We've seen them step up and perform in these spots before.
Yes, but on the flip side, they've also done all of that at home. It seems to the point where I don't believe in them being able to win an additional game on the road. Even if every series goes seven, you've got to win one at home.
And you don't think that they could win one on the road?
Can they? Sure. Do I have faith in it? No.
Okay. All right. They've got 13 road games remaining. I don't know how many of those they're going to win. The pace, I believe, if my math is correct, the pace is like 4 and 8.5 is where they are. So that's pretty much what they would do on the road, because they've lost 2/3 of their road games. So effectively 4 and 8.5 would be the projection if they do what they've done continuously. Now they're playing some weaker teams on the road. Maybe they're locked in. Maybe they're playing better. Maybe they're trying to ramp up for the postseason. But Tyler, I was much more in line with what you were saying as opposed to Devon earlier tonight in terms of projecting how they do on the road, just because there's really no proof positive on the screen or on the court that they have turned the corner on the road. Can they win you over, though, in terms of winning? You know, you said having no faith in them winning a playoff game on the road that would let them win the series. If they go 500 on the road, if they go 6-7 for the rest of the way there, do you feel better?
See, I don't know if I feel better, because that's kind of what I anticipate, is 6-7.
Yeah.
Based on who they play on the road, because I've got to imagine the best they're going to go at Staples Center over that 3-game stretch is 1-1.
Okay.
And then they've got a game against Sacramento, should win that. And then I think the rest is against the East, I believe. But if they can go 6-7, I don't know if that changes me at all. If they can go 8-5, then I have a much greater hope for them to win a couple of playoff series.
So 8 is kind of the number on the road that would be closer to winning you over.
Yeah, I think so, because if you get to 8, and like we talked about earlier with Devon, if they can go 11-3 in their home stretch, that's 19 wins. That gets you to what? What are they at now? 31?
Yep.
Is that what it is? 31? No.
No, they have more than that.
34.
Yeah.
So it gets you to 53. And then if that's the case, then you have Miami would have to go 18-10 to not get surpassed.
They've been sliding a little bit too. Wonder if that team's going to trend in the wrong direction.
I would tend to agree, and then we talked about this with Andrew today on the middays. Their schedule's just as easy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of Atlanta, a lot of Charlotte.
They got a get-right schedule.
Yeah.
610-632-0975. Oh, Brian just dropped off. So we do have wide open phone lines, so it can be you at the front of the line. 610-632-0975. There are two NBA playoff teams in the Eastern Conference in the Brooklyn Nets and the Orlando Magic who have a negative point differential. Gotta love the NBA. And there's only one in the Western Conference. Whew. Man, oh man. All right, so I wanted to get to this, and we can continue the Sixers talk as well. But I know that I wanted to hear from you guys regarding the proposed new playoff format. And this isn't necessarily the 2021 update that we can get to as well regarding the length of the season and stuff like that. This is the playoff alteration to the process that will begin this upcoming year, according to Adam Schefter, which is to say that one more playoff team per side will make it. So you go from six teams in the field per conference to seven. A bye gets eliminated, so the two seed no longer gets the bye. And now you have three playoff games on the Saturday and Sunday of Wild Card Weekend. Reaction has been mixed on Twitter. Social media has been, there are lots of people that just want more playoff football, and obviously I understand those people. I'm one of those people. I'm supportive of the new playoff format. Tyler, where do you come down on it? What do you think?
This is where we talked about earlier. You might get riled up, Tyler. This stinks.
Why does it stink?
This stinks because, again, we are pushing towards participation trophy, rewarding mediocrity, giving almost half the league a chance to compete for the playoffs. We talked about it in the break. Did anyone want the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Los Angeles Rams, other than Pat Callahan, in the playoffs this past season?
No,
at 8-8?
Neither of those teams.
Duck Hodges was gross.
Yes.
And Jared Goff was maybe just as bad.
Yikes. One of those guys getting paid a lot more than the other
one. Yeah, that's true. But so to me, like, I look at those two teams and I just can't fathom either of them being a playoff team. And then on the flip side, you said you liked it, meaning the regular season means more. But to me, how can you, especially in seasons where you get big time winners, how can you put a 12 win team or a 13 win team to play in the wild card round?
Well, it's you almost don't look at it that way, right? Because the wild card round used to be an insult, right? Like, effectively, you were not good enough to be one of the top two teams. So, as a result, you were forced to play against the teams that barely made it in. Now, it's almost like a shift in that there's only one team that is good enough to bypass the round. There's only one team that has earned the right to just roll straight through into the second round of the playoffs, rather than it being a punishment for the third seed and the fourth seed. Instead, I actually view it the other way, as more of a reward for earning the top seed, if that makes sense. Like, it's almost more of incentive-based stuff through reward to earn the top seed, rather than trying to stay away from the punishment of being the third seed or the fourth seed, and so you quote-unquote have to play on wild card weekend.
Yeah, but I think to counter that, then the two just becomes the punishment. It's not that you're making one strictly the ultimate goal. The two itself is, I mean, if you look at it through the last, 8 years, mm-hmm. the two seed is not a great place to be, but it's something to shoot for. It's at least a chance to not have to worry about a home game until the title round.
Okay, but
or a road game until the title round.
But why is that decisively better? Like, not decisively. Why is it that much better than the three seed? You know, why the cutoff there?
It's the week off.
But
you mean in who determining who gets it?
Yeah, why the cutoff there? You know, it was just a numbers.
Yeah,
I think
that the generally, and you again, you get outliers, but generally speaking, you get a 13 win team and a 12 win team,
right?
Usually, how often do you get a second 12 win team that's not wild card?
Rare.
Right. So at that point, 11 is not enough to get you a bye.
Okay.
11 is not enough to deserve a bye, and 10 is certainly not enough to deserve a bye.
All right, but as long as we're talking outliers, right? Like, we talked about the 7-9 Seahawks team that won a home playoff game, but, like, what if there is a 12-win team, and it comes down to, like, strength of victory that determines in the old 6-team playoff format that one of these 12-win teams does not get to have a bye and one does? Like, you know.
Well, I think that when you're breaking it down to such a minute tiebreaker,
yeah,
there's so many things along the way where you could have, you know, you win one game here, you lose one game there. When it's just record, when it's just this team has 13 wins, they're the 1 seed, this team has 12 wins, they're the 2 seed, this team has 11, they're the 3 seed, that is a very obvious and determinable factor.
Sure.
That is going to say the 12-win team should have a bye and the 11-win team should not. On the flip side, when you're getting it down to that last level, you know, strength of opponent victory or whatever it is, you know, that's, I guess you're you know, you're splitting hairs at that point.
Got to see the history of 12-win 3 seeds. See if we have anything like that. But
I bet you'll find that over the course of history, there are more 12-win 5 seeds than there are 12-win 3 seeds.
Because divisions,
yeah, you know, you get a wild card team that gets bunched up. I think we had it last year. I think the Chargers were the 5 seed at 12-4.
So the Patriots were the 3 seed, right?
This season.
And I think they also were 12-4. I think.
But what separated the two was the Chiefs beat the Patriots. Head to head. Easy.
Yeah.
You know, so that to me is good enough to say this 2 seed is better than the 3 seed in just the head to head schedule.
3 seeds in the wild card round of the playoffs since 2002 were 17-15 against 6 seeds at home.
That's ugly. So now you're exposing 2 seeds to that. Now, I know the difference between the 5 and the 6 can often be dramatic because, like you said, like we talked about, you get a 12-win Chargers team, and I don't even remember what the second wild card team was that year, but
right.
You know, so it might have been the Bills. I think it was the Bills.
Makes sense.
I think they were 9-7, maybe 10-6. But the drop off between the 3 playing the 5, or no, wait, it would be the 3 playing the 6, wouldn't it be?
No.
In the first round, with the current construct.
Oh, and with the current yes.
So what that tells me is that the 3 seeds. And the wild card teams are not that far apart. I think the 2 seeds in the wild cards are. We know the 1 seeds in the wild cards are. I mean, we saw Tennessee beat Baltimore this year, but usually the case is that the 1 seed is definitely better, and the 2 seed is very likely better.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think taking away that second bye is a mistake.
It's tough, huh? I really understand what you're saying. I really do. I think that the big reason why I hang on to it is because I like the idea that there's only one team that gets rewarded because it is easy, right, to become that team that, like, look at what happened with the Seahawks and the 49ers this year. It's easy to become that team that drops from 1-6. You know what I mean? Like, I think that if you are 1-5, it's like you just said, you often see teams, 2 12-win teams, and one of those is a wild card team. So I think if you're able to survive that, you should be rewarded. If you're able to survive parity and a tough division, stuff like that, and you get the 1 seed, you should be, I don't know why you should be rewarded if you get the 2 seed, you know, rather than just the 1 seed when that's like the ultimate prize. When you win the race, I mean, that's what the object of the game is.
So I know that it's not schematically possible because the numbers don't work.
Right.
But if you were to ask me, you can pick one or the other. I don't hate giving up the bye as much as I hate adding a 7th team.
Another team gets in, I think it dilutes the play.
And this goes back to, I get roasted all the time on Twitter by my group of friends. When you look at the college football playoff, it's the same thing. I think 4 is a great number. Because it's going to give you the four. It should, in theory, yield the four best teams in college football. You go to eight, all of a sudden you've got probably a three-loss team in there. You may have a non-Power 5 conference winner in there. No one cares that Memphis won the American. I'm sorry.
Right. Well, so that's my...
To me, it's the same thing.
You already run the risk. As far as I'm concerned, I'm sorry to all the Sooner fans out there. As far as I'm concerned, Oklahoma was not one of the four best teams and didn't deserve to be in there to begin with. But at least with four teams, you minimize the impact of the selection committee being aware of which teams are good for TV.
Right.
You know what I mean? You have only so much that you can do there. So I'm on board with you. But like one of the problems that I have is that the Saints went 13-3 this year and were a three seed in the NFC. Like, and what happens is, like, their fate was determined by the Seahawks 49ers game and the Lions Packers game. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to make it, if you're not going to reward division winners with anything guaranteed beyond a home playoff game, it's kind of arbitrary to say, all right, and the top two of those get byes. Like, I understand, I get where you're coming from 100%, but I also get the league's logic of we're going to reward only the top team with the bye, and the rest of these teams get to host a playoff game as their reward. We'll see. I don't know what the reaction's going to be from the players, although it seems that it's been kind of support on both sides, the league side and the player side, in terms of this collective bargaining. We'll see what else happens here, because there is a lot of stuff that we do have to get to, including a change in the number of preseason games and regular season games that also appears to be in the mix here for not this upcoming season, but the following. We'll get to that next. 610-632-0975. It's the Joe Torty Show, hanging out until midnight right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torty on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hoops, hoops, and more hoops. So many great college and pro games to bet on this time of the year. Plus, the March tournament is just around the corner. That's why you got to go with a sports book you can trust. Parx Casino. Look, it's no secret. I'm Philly proud. I love the home team. That's why I choose the home team at Parx Casino as my sports book of choice. They're right here in Bucks County. The only sports book run by the number one casino in all of PA. And there's so many ways to wager. Spreads, props, parlays, teasers, live in-game betting. Just download the Parx Casino Sportsbook app now or go to parxcasino.com/PA. Use my promo code QB500 and get your first risk-free bet up to $500, which is refunded as a free bet and account credit. See website for details. Use my promo code QB500 and get your first risk-free bet up to $500. My sportsbook of choice should be yours, too. Parx Casino and Sportsbook. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Need to bring in Tyler Zuli here. It is the Joe Torty Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. As we've had a question regarding one of my takes on Twitter, regarding my assertion that Oklahoma, not one of the four best teams in college football. At White G6 tweets in, if Oklahoma wasn't one of the four best teams, and who was, it certainly wasn't Georgia, who got smoked in the SEC title game, or Oregon. I didn't like Oregon as a team this year. I didn't think Georgia had a chance to win the national title. I thought it was just LSU or Clemson. I thought those were the only two teams that had a chance.
I don't agree with that entirely, because okay. I would add Ohio State to the mix.
I truly thought
they were the most complete team.
Okay.
Because I thought their defense was better than either Clemson's or LSU's.
Okay.
I really did. I didn't anticipate the offense not showing up for
that game.
Yeah. 45 minutes. But, yeah.
But either way, we're in agreement that the team that is in the fourth spot is not a legitimate national title contender to begin with, regardless, right?
Most years.
This year.
Oh, this particular year? Yeah no. It wouldn't have mattered.
Okay.
You could have put Abilene Christian there.
I think that Georgia is decisively better than Oklahoma. Like, I think if they went head-to-head, I think Georgia would have beaten Oklahoma up.
That is a tough question.
You're not sure?
Okay. I'm not, like, it's not a foregone conclusion like I think you seem to feel. I could make the argument that you're correct, but I don't believe it's a foregone conclusion.
Okay, fair enough. South Carolina in double overtime is not a good loss for Georgia. It's really
no,
not
no,
a good
it's
loss.
A bad loss. I mean, especially without their starting quarterback.
But Oklahoma lost to Kansas State. Like, that's way worse.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Really?
Kansas State flirted with top 25 this season.
But in late October?
I think they were 6-1 at that point, weren't they?
Let me see.
5-1?
Let me see where they were. I thought they had two losses by that point. Let me see.
They've been 5-2.
They beat Nicholls State, Bowling Green, Mississippi State, lost back-to-back games to Oklahoma State and Baylor. So they were 4-2 at that time.
Okay.
When they beat Oklahoma. That was their fifth win. All right. I didn't think K-State was great shakes at the time.
I got to tell you, I don't know if there was a fourth team anywhere in college football that was great this year.
UCF, you missed it. Like, you missed your chance.
Baylor, the numbers look good, but Baylor was winning a lot of games like, you know, 24-7.
Right. Yeah,
it just didn't add up. I mean, if I had to pick a team for that fourth spot, it probably would have been Georgia. But I think,
or Oklahoma, like, you would have had.
Yeah, I mean, right? I think maybe Oregon. I don't know. It's
you're a Justin Herbert guy. See,
I am.
You're in the. But do you agree with my point that if UCF had the season that they had a couple seasons ago? And
that would have been where they got in.
They would. Yeah. This would have been the year.
Yeah.
Yep. Missed the chance. That's all right. They're still national champs. They say so. They tell you all about it, how they're national champs.
That's not true.
Couldn't agree with you more. Let's go to Dennis and Ben Salem next on the Fanatic. Good question, though, White G6. What's going on, Dennis?
Yeah, not much, brother. Just saw some late-breaking news on that Greg Robinson issue with the 157 pounds a week.
Oh, hold on 1 second. Tyler, we need the breaking news sounder.
No. Don't need that.
There we go. We got it. Okay, go ahead, Dennis.
They tied Zion Williamson into it.
What?
Apparently they found Giannis' arm in there from 3 weeks ago. I'm sorry, man. Oh. I still can't get over that thing.
Dude.
That thing was just ridiculous.
Yeah. Giannis' arm. I'm glad that he was able to play in the All-Star game. Let me put
Holy
it that way.
Crap. The Sixers. I don't know what you guys are drinking over there at 97.5, but based on everything I've seen from the Sixers team the last couple of years, they're going to lose to bad teams down the stretch. They're going to lose to Chicago's, Charlotte's, Orlando's, Atlanta's. They just, for whatever reason, can't seem to beat them.
Right.
And now, after the All-Star break, they just... This is where they go on cruise control. Oh, we're in the playoffs. We'll turn it back on when the playoffs start. I would love to see them go 8-5 on the road. I would love to see it. It would be great.
I said that, the other way. They're going to go 5-8 on the road.
Oh, I said I would love to see that. That would delay all my concerns about the postseason, and I honestly think if they did something like that, I could see them making the finals.
Okay, yep.
Sadly, I see them going more 3-10.
3-10?
Yeah. Their record on the road this season... Is it historically awful? It's an actual question. A team that's this good to be that bad on the road, I don't remember ever seeing that.
Well, I guess the question is, like, how do you measure that? Because you would say that most teams that have that record on the road aren't. Yeah.
And considering some of those teams we're going to be facing on the road, we just can't seem to beat. Hi, Charlotte. I'm scared. I'm genuinely worried about how they're going to finish the season.
Dennis, you should be, man. And thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. Like I said, the pace that they're on is 4-8.5 down the road. That doesn't have me super excited. And especially the fact is that they've got this easy schedule. I think Dennis is right. They haven't played up to their potential against these weak teams. They're getting the business from John Collins. You know what I mean? I know Trey Young's on that team too, but like, they're getting the business from John Collins.
Yeah, that's a nice Hawks team that should be way better than what they are.
Yeah, I agree.
But you're right. I mean, you can't lose those games. You can't lose twice in Orlando. You can't score 13 points against Denver in the fourth quarter. Yeah, that's the one that drives Devon crazy.
Yeah, 13 points against Denver.
You know, you lose to Utah, you blow a lead there. You know, these are all over the stretch of the last 55 games, but they add up.
Yeah, they all count.
You know, if you win, if you split in Orlando and you win that Denver game, you're the four seed by half a game.
Right.
Currently. And you're 36-19.
Yeah, you're in a world of difference. Man, oh man.
You're what, a game, two games out of Boston? Or two and a half at that point?
Let's see. I just closed my NBA standings tab.
And that's just
yes,
basic.
Yes, you would be. Yep,
that's just win a game in Orlando and don't lose a fourth quarter in Denver 35-13.
Yeah, right.
That's two basic things.
And then you're right there. Now, here's the thing. It wouldn't shock me to see any of these teams in front of them take a small step back. You know, the gap in the Eastern Conference overall, like besides behind the Bucks, you're 12 and a half games behind the Bucks. You're not going to catch the Bucks. But the Raptors have seven more losses than the Bucks have. And they're the second seed, right? Like, there's room 2-6. There's a lot of moving and shaking that could happen down the stretch if a team has the wrong injury, if a team starts playing the wrong way, they get complacent, whatever. I'm not saying that the Sixers are less likely than any other team to have that experience, by the way. But what I am saying is that, like, it would not be unheard of for this gap to be closed in with the games that the Sixers have left. They're 55 in. That's all. I'm not saying that they would make the two seed. I'm saying that there's room to climb if teams get injured, if teams don't play well, the Sixers get hot, they are even average on the road. Like, if they go 6-7 on the road or 7-6 on the road, you're talking about potentially, if they keep doing what they're doing at home, you're talking about doing some climbing.
Playing a lot of ifs, though.
That is a lot of ifs. It's a ton of ifs.
And it's a lot of, not only is it a lot of ifs, it's a lot of outside help ifs. You
right,
know, if this team does this, if that team does that, that's not something I'm a fan of.
No.
Worrying about somebody else.
And that's the position that they're in now.
And they've done it to themselves.
That's what you were just laying out. It's no one's fault but their own. When you score 13 points against Denver, when you're losing to Atlanta, when you're losing both games against Orlando, that doesn't really work. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torti and at 97.5. The Fanatic. Man, oh man. White G6 back in on the college football discussion. That may be true, but they're not going to pick a conference winner over a two-loss Georgia team. I agree
he's
with that.
Correct.
I agree with that completely.
In the choosing, he's correct.
Yeah, they chose the team. That's what I said. They chose the team. And I'm not saying that Oklahoma should not have been chosen. I'm saying if you're trying to find the four best, I'm just not sure about that. Plus, the loss to South Carolina was just bad. Yeah. First of all, South Carolina shouldn't take you to two overtimes. And if you lose to them, that's ridiculous. I agree completely there.
Well, and the issue, too, being is it's clear that the committee has put value on September, early September and early October losses more so than they value a mid-November loss. And what I mean by value is, I guess it, I should say devalue. They devalue you when you lose when you're 10-0 more so than when you're 2-0.
Right. Those losses are crippling.
Yes.
And somehow 2-0 losses are like, oh, well, you know, it's early in the
especially
season.
Especially in non-conference.
Yeah.
They don't value non-conference games at all.
It's tough to figure out. Well, it's not tough to figure out because it's been pretty predictable, but it is tough to logically justify, which is, of course, why Tyler Zuli is a fan of opening up the playoff field to 16 teams, you know, just to make sure that you have the absolute right teams in there.
Just go back to zero.
Just go back to zero.
They're just playing for fun. No championship. No, I think four is perfect. I really do.
I think four is good, too. I really do. How about five teams and the top team gets
a bye? One team gets a bye? Sure. Why don't we do that? Sure. Uh-huh. You know what? In fact, how about we don't play a season at all, and there's a 130-team tournament.
Yeah.
And everybody gets in.
Well, you could just go on the rankings. You don't even need to play any games. You could just, like, figure out the preseason rankings. And then,
so Alabama's a national champion every year.
And then just, yeah, figure out the playoff seeding then.
But, like, think about the hypothetical, like the joke that we just said, the 1 versus 130.
Yeah.
Alabama versus, you know, Akron.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's scary.
That's scary, yeah.
Like, that's not even fun.
Well, I mean, those are money games. Like, those are games you have to pay Akron to come play Bama.
No, but what I mean is if that's the playoff, if we were just... in the hypothetical dream world where all 130 teams play in a tournament.
Well, I think it's super cool that I'm sure that you follow this, the FCS does have like an extended tournament.
Yes, I think it's great.
And there are seeded teams
that have buys.
But
that's a playoff.
That is a big time.
That's a playoff format.
Yeah, right.
In the current construct of the playoff, the college football playoff, it cannot expand.
Yeah, it can't be any bigger. I agree. I don't agree with 8. I don't agree with 6. I don't agree with any more than 4. Because if you're talking about like truly valuing the regular season, if LSU goes 14-0, they should be in the championship game. You know? It's not the same as some of these other teams. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. My sister is a Clemson graduate. My family is a Clemson supporting group. They understood that Clemson, quote-unquote, isn't playing anybody. So if you have any losses at all, you're not in. You get that. Everybody understands the rules. Don't expand the playoff. It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Under the new format, two new teams in the club in the NFL postseason. In addition, in 2021, the reports are from ESPN's Adam Schefter that the regular season will expand to 17 games and the preseason will shrink to 3 games. It seems that there is support for this. What do you think? We like it? Do we not like it? I don't think that, first of all, you need to expand the rosters if you're going to do this. Right? Like, as far as I can tell, it makes no sense to have a 53-man roster and have people that you have to declare inactive, and then you experience injuries like, I don't know, Carson Wentz getting injured in the Seahawks game, and then Josh McCown getting his hamstring torn off the bone, and thinking, gee, I wish we had another player on the roster like Nate Sudfeld, who's sitting there not doing anything because he's quote-unquote inactive. He needs to be active, right? If you're going to play another regular season game, rosters have to expand to at least 50. At least. Or else players just aren't going to last. You're not going to last through. What do you mean? It's the same number of total games. Yeah, in the preseason, you're seeing the starters, the stars, the guys who play the most, not really getting all that much work. You're talking about adding another regular season game. And I don't anticipate that there's going to be a bye smacked into the season. I hope that there is. That'd be great if there's another bye week. But I'm thinking that it's just kind of business as usual. 610-632-0975. You on board with this? Tyler, what do you think?
I'm actually in agreement with you. I'm on board if a second bye gets added. So if you're playing 17 games, obviously you can't do everybody is off in 1 week.
Right.
The NFL would kill them. But somewhere in that play 5 games, get a bye, play 6 games, get a bye, play 6 games, get a bye, or, and then the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm cool with that. I think that that's necessary. It's what it's going to do is it's going to extend the season a week, obviously, more than it already is. Well, I guess what would they do? Is the proposed plan to start a week earlier in the last week of August?
I don't have dates with this. I just have that the regular season's expanding to 17 games and that the preseason's shrinking by a game.
So, because I don't know how you feel about it, but that last week of August is a lot of times a lot of people's vacation.
Right. Yes.
I don't know how you feel about it, but even in week one of the NFL season, it's usually pretty nice, still in the 70s.
Weather-wise, yeah.
Yeah. I don't get into the football swing of things until week two or three, like fully. I don't know if I could push that back another week. Because I really do believe, I think there's a lot of people, not myself withstanding, because I'm a college football nerd.
Right.
But I think that there are a lot of people that use that two-week span of college football as like a buffer.
Okay, fair enough.
Because they don't want to watch the preseason, but college football's in week zero and week one. It gives you that chance to watch real legitimate football and kind of, you know, the gears start moving again. They've been cold all summer, and now they're cranking again.
So the thing about the buys is cool. If you're not going to do that, I have another awesome idea that will never be adopted. And I might have brought this up on This Week in Pro Football, so Tyler, forgive me if you've already heard this. 17 games, and every player on your roster can only play in a maximum of 16 all year. I love it. I think this idea is amazing.
Yeah, I actually don't have an issue with that idea, and I've actually heard people take it a step further and say they can only play in 15 games.
Oh, so you got to sit your starting quarterback
twice.
Two games. Oh, man.
So it brings up the argument, if you're the Eagles, do you just, you know, assuming that, you know, the where the roster is going to be and what you think your team is, do you play your week one divisional game to win that game, win a division game, and then hope that maybe you draw an AFC team in week two or three, and you just sit Carson for week two and three, and then you play him for the rest? You know, all these hypotheticals would have to start churning in your head.
Any time that you have to think out roster decisions, I think is awesome. Like when you're watching, for example, baseball managers utilizing relief pitchers, knowing that you've got, say, like a doubleheader tomorrow, or you're in the first leg of the doubleheader. I love that level of strategy. I think that's super cool.
My totally unwanted opinion, by the way.
Yeah, let it rip.
When we talk about this, keep the AL, the DL, the DH in the AL. I don't need it in the National League.
Yeah,
same thing.
I'm with you. I understand. All right, here we go. It's that time of the evening. We've cut into it already. The often imitated, never duplicated, the one, the only, one more thing.
But there is one more thing.
I saw this earlier today, and I didn't know what to make of it when I saw it. But here we go. We saw the Cleveland Cavaliers players. You heard about the whole ugliness with John Beilein calling them thugs, and now Beilein's no longer the coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers and stuff like that, right? I saw that Cavs players purposely played thug-titled songs around head coach John Beilein, according to The Athletic. Yeah, his comments led the team to rebel in one of the most passive-aggressive ways that I could imagine. You talk about dysfunction. You think that Brett Brown doesn't have the Sixers. I'm not saying that Brett Brown is the world's greatest head coach and that he's about to win NBA Coach of the Year. But when you read about what's going on in Cleveland, you understand why a lot of these college coaches do not make the jump to the NBA, because some of these situations are just horrendous, whether they're helping them or not. This got way worse than a lot of us anticipated. Some people thought it was just going to be swept under the rug, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, I think about Beilein specifically. He's had so many opportunities, I thought, to take an NBA job. I thought he took a terrible situation, a no-win situation. I mean, he basically did the same thing Fred Hoiberg did. Now you see where Fred Hoiberg's at.
That's exactly right.
Back in Nebraska.
Yep. So, people ask about Jay Wright all the time. Jay Wright will not take the Knicks job. Jay Wright will not take the Sixers job. You have to have a primo job in order for Jay Wright to leave. San Antonio, Miami, Golden State in the event that Steve Kerr can't do his thing anymore with his back, Oklahoma City. There's only so many jobs that would be good enough for Jay Wright. Cleveland not going to be one of those. New York not going to be one of those.
Oklahoma City's a good one.
It's a great job, isn't it?
17 first-round picks.
It's pretty good. That's why I said it. So there we go. All right, here you go. Final credits of this one. That was One More Thing. Thanks to everybody who called and tweeted in. My co-host for the evening, including Devon Givens, for sharing the microphone with me for 2 hours. Tyler Zuli, outstanding job, up to your normal standard. Get home safely. How did the marathon go, by the way? 24 straight hours of
producing. You know, it was a grind, but we made it.
Yeah, good job. Get home safely. Everybody have a great one. I will talk to you next week. This has been the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.